Imagine a new kind of investing, a potentially life-changing way to invest that honors biblical principles, the kind of principles that you and I grew up with. Since 1994, Timothy Plan has made biblically responsible investing possible, offering mutual funds and ETFs that are filtered for biblical principles. Don't compromise your values. Invest with Timothy Plan. Ask your financial advisor or call Timothy Plan at 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Again, that's 1-800-846-7526 and discover what it means to be a biblically responsible investor. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider a fund's investment objective, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners, LTD, and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC. As a paid testimonial, there is no guarantee of future performance, and each experience will differ.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Fire! 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 Fire!
Pursuing truth. Torching idols. Rebelling against the world. This is the Hype Fire Podcast.
Some said it couldn't be done. Some said it couldn't be done. But here we are, the 7th Hype Fire Podcast. Oh yeah, no, it's no problem to make it to 5 or 6. But making it to 7 podcasts, that isn't easily done. But we've done it, and you've been with us. I appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. Peter at peterheck.com is the email address, peter at peterheck.com. Would love to hear from you. The topic today, what I want to talk to you about, I know other people have shared their thoughts, but I've got a couple of unique perspectives, I think, on this story that hopefully will make a difference. I do need to let you know that if you are involved in our paid subscriber community, which I would love for all of you to be, if you're involved in that, if you are a paid subscriber, your After Hours is coming shortly after the Hype Fire Podcast today. Rather than sending it to you truly after hours at night, you spoke last week when I asked the question in the After Hours, and so we're going to send that immediately following this podcast. So be checking for that second email. I would love for all of you to join and be part of that paid subscriber community. The topic, and I found this, I came across this, I shouldn't say I found it, I didn't go out looking for it. A piece of audio, or video if you're watching this on YouTube, a piece of audio from the 2004 Senate debate that Barack Obama had when he was running for Senator of Illinois, as he was on this rocket ship that was going to catapult him to the presidency in 2008, a debate against another black man, Republican, who would have made an incredible president of the United States. And I was reminded of that. And it was on the topic of gay marriage. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care who you are, I don't care what you believe, I mean, I do, you will have never heard a better explanation, logical, grounded, sensical, and unbelievably intellectual explanation for the concept and the notion of marriage between a man and a woman only. You will never have heard a better one. Sorry, I didn't turn my dinger off there on my computer. Then what I'm going to play for you in the After Hours section. It was... And I'll tell you what, when you're watching it, you see Barack Obama's face as his opponent is articulating this. And you think Barack Obama is articulate, you chump change compared to what this guy is. In fact, and I'll point this out to our paid subscriber audience, but this guy is the intellect that everybody pretended Barack Obama was. It just, he's amazing. And that that piece of audio is worth the price of admission. It's worth the price of a year as a paid subscriber in and of itself. So that's coming up on that. I do also need to let you know, before I get to the story here for the Heckfire podcast, I'm only 45 minutes into the podcast, that this will be the last one of the year. I'm going to go ahead and take next week off to spend it with the family, and I feel a little bit bad about that, but at the same time, you should be spending time with your family or loved ones or friends or whatever it is that you've got. You should be doing that as well next week instead of worrying about Heckfire. So we'll be back then to start the new year, but this is it. This is the last one of the year, and I feel like we're ending strong. I appreciate the new subscriptions that have come in and the new listeners that have come in. Keep it up. Spread the word. It's awesome. So here's the story that I want to mention. I'm just going to read the highlights of this story. 14-year-old student Ruby Vergara, substitute teacher Aaron West. They've been identified as the two people killed by a 15-year-old female shooter who opened fire at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, Wisconsin on Monday morning. Both Vergara and West died at the scene of the shooting from firearm-related trauma, according to the medical examiner's office. The 15-year-old shooter, who I'm not going to mention the name, opened fire with a handgun in a study hall classroom that had students from mixed grades. At the school where I teach, a study hall also has mixed grades. So that's not just the situation at a smaller private Christian school. That's the way it is in a lot of study hall rooms. So the shooter goes in to a study hall classroom. She killed Vergara and West and then wounded six other students before turning the gun on herself. There is no indication at this point that the shooter was targeting specific people. And there's no word yet on whether the shooter was actually in that study hall or just went to that study hall. Here's what Barnes, who is the police chief, Sean Barnes, said. The shooter made a decision to walk into that study hall with mixed high school students and open fire. And then this line really stuck out at me. Everyone in that room had an equal chance of dying that day. Vergara, the student, was a high school freshman. And I know it doesn't, you don't have to have this kind of a correlation, but I have a high school freshman, a girl, who is a high school freshman. To think that this is the same age. And you know, anytime there's an incident like this, it could be one of yours. At any moment, it could be one of yours. So it doesn't have to be just because this girl was a... But it does. It hits home a little bit more. It says that she was an avid reader. She loved art. She loved singing and playing keyboard in the worship band. Her gentle, loving, kind heart was reflected in her smile. Ruby was a blessing to her class and our school. She was not only a good friend, but a great big sister. That's what the school said in a statement. Often seen with a book in hand, she had a gift for art and music, yet it was Ruby's love for Jesus that shined brightest, and she shared his love with others by volunteering faithfully. She'll be missed deeply by her teachers and fellow students. Then there was the substitute teacher, West. What was her first name? I've got to find the name again. Was it Carrie West? Aaron West, sorry. West was a substitute teacher for 3 years, until she took the full-time role as the in-house substitute teacher and the coordinator for the Christian school. So it sounds like whenever there was an opening, somebody needed to be the substitute, she would try to find a placement for that, she would coordinate that, and if they couldn't find one, then she would step in and be that substitute. She served our teachers and students with grace and humor and wisdom, and most importantly, with the love of Jesus. Her loss is a painful and deep one, and she will be greatly missed, not just among our staff, but among our ALCS family. So this story, and I know that a lot of people have been commenting on it, a lot of people have opinions and takes on the whole thing. Of course, President Biden wasted no time in immediately coming out and calling for more gun control laws. The thing about it is, like, if somebody truly believed that those would help alleviate the problem, that if those things... Here's what annoys me. This is what annoys me. It's not somebody who diligently and earnestly and honestly believes that enacting these gun laws that they're suggesting, that they would actually help the situation. If you really believe that and that's your honest take on the whole thing, then that's okay with me. I may not end up agreeing with you, but I have no problem with people suggesting potential solutions. What irks me is when people don't care. And if you want to say, well, he's the president of the United States, first of all, the president of the United States doesn't have any idea what's going on. So whoever wrote this, if you want to say that that person is at the federal level and they don't know about these situations, like what goes on in Madison, they don't know all the details, fine, say that. But then they shouldn't be making statements. Because what that statement said was, it listed off all of these things, at least a handful of them, these demands that Democrat lawmakers have for gun control, and if you would have enacted every single one of them, it wouldn't have stopped what happened in Madison, Wisconsin. That's what irks me. That's what bothers me, because what it says is, you don't care to take the time to figure out what went on here, to speak to the issue of what went on in this situation. You're not speaking to the victims. You're not speaking to the victims' families. You're not speaking to the school community. You're speaking political platitudes of what your party wants to advance. And you're using a tragedy to try to do that. Now, again, if you are close to the situation and you look at it and say, well, if we would have enacted this law, that would have prevented the shooter from doing this, then that to me is a completely legitimate thing to say. Whether or not, again, I'm going to end up agreeing with you, that's wholly separate from whether or not it is a fair-minded, a rational, a legitimate, and an important contribution to the conversation. What I'm irked at, and what I think we all should be fed up with, is people who don't care, and they demonstrate that they don't care by making a statement that is saying, well, this is what we have to do, when if they took even 5 minutes to look into what actually happened, they would know that all of the things that they said don't have anything to do with the crime that was committed. So that's thing one. All the people sharing their opinions and thoughts, I don't mind. I don't mind people share. I'm always of the belief, I haven't always been this way, but I am this way, that more speech is better than limiting speech. I don't want to shut people up, especially about something where I'm going to tell you there's no easy answers. Do I think moral rot is at the heart of this? Yeah, I do, ultimately. But I don't know the shooter, and I don't know the shooter's upbringing. I don't know a lot about it. The things that I've read seem to indicate that moral rot and familial discord and a lot of this other stuff probably played a factor in it. We know it was a 15-year-old shooter. What do people always say? They'll always say, well, it's the violent video games, it's the violent movies that are watched, it's that the individual didn't have a close friends or a group of confidants. Listen, I'm not bragging about these things, but I'm trying to make a point. I played violent video games as a kid. I remember when I was a kid, Nintendo first came out, and so Nintendo didn't have a lot of stuff, but Contra was a big Nintendo game, and they had machine guns and all kinds of stuff, and you were killing people as well as aliens. So I definitely played what would be considered a violent video game, and then of course it got progressively worse, and you had James Bond, and the throwing knives, and everything else, and the rocket launchers, and I played all those games. And violent movies, I used to really be into them. Now, I really used to like the Scream franchise. I like the thrill that I got watching it. So I watched those movies. And attention deficit disorder, that's me. And it just wasn't a thing when I was a kid. And friends. Once I settled into a school, I had friends, but we moved a lot with Dad being in the Air Force. And so I would go for periods of time without close confidants. So if you look at just those things that everybody says, and all the experts say, well, these are the things that lead to it. Man, I had every single one of them. And I never once thought about picking up a gun and going in and killing anybody. Never once thought about that stuff. So what that tells me is those things aren't necessarily good. They are fuel that you are adding to a fire that is already burning, but the fire's already burning. So what is that fire? Is it mental illness? I think in some cases it is. That a person is depressed, there's a screw loose, there's help that is needed. Is it the psychotropic drugs? I mean, I think a lot of research still needs to be done on that because, yes, you know how many people are taking those types of drugs, and you're not seeing all of those people turn into vicious, violent animals. So is it a certain type of personality that has a bad reaction to these kinds of drugs? Is that what we're going to argue? I don't think any of us should pretend that we have the answers to all of this. I know that there's people who are really, really convinced that this is a drug issue and we're drugging our children too early and they're getting on these drugs and it's messing with their minds and it's causing all of this stuff. But that really falls flat when you consider that 99% of those who are on those drugs don't do anything like this. So that doesn't stand up to the test of the evidence. So let's not pretend that these are easy solutions. These are not easy answers, which is why we need to have a full and frank discussion about it. Is it mental illness like the recent shootings have been transgender shooters? Okay, if you have a mental illness, then I think the last thing we should be doing is affirming mental illness and encouraging people in delusion and not getting them help. But do I think that that's the sole thing? Well, we got to stop this transgender stuff, otherwise we're going to keep having... There's no indication that I've seen that this particular shooter was like that. Harris and Klebold weren't like that. So there's a contagion there. There's something going on. Is it just an individual that goes off the rails and they have greater access to violent weapons? Is that what it is? How about this? What about the advent and the reality of social media? So what does social media do? It does a lot of stuff, and some of the stuff is good, but social media fuels disassociative behavior, does it not? It fuels antisocial behavior. It fuels isolationist behavior, and it fuels demonization of others. Just think about yourself. I'm very convicted by this. I will say things behind a keyboard that I would not say to another person's face. And if you just live behind a keyboard, you can quickly become radicalized. You can easily come to believe. And is that what's going on here? I don't know enough about the situation to know if that's what went on there or not. Is it a parental refusal to note problems in a child? Did these parents see that their child was going off the rails? There have been indications that the kid had said things about their parents and was kind of in rebellion to the parents. So did the parents not do their job in locking up their weapons? Did the parents not do their job in trailing their kid and following their kid and making sure? I don't know. Does the whole thing fall on the shoulder of the parents? Or is there personal responsibility? A 15-year-old, they seem to be somewhat autonomous and independent, separate from their parents in some ways. 15-year-olds can hide things from their parents. So is this a parental problem? Or how about this? Is it a situation where parents are now afraid to point out or to say that their child has problems and needs help? Is their child demonstrating behavior that the parent is concerned about, that the parent sees as disruptive, or not even disruptive, but... bad. How's that for a good word? You know, that a parent sees as concerning, but then they're afraid to say anything because we live in a society where you have to affirm your child. Don't say because your child is believing themselves to be this, or is acting in this way, or is dressing in this way, or is talking in this way, or is befriending these people. Don't say that your student has some sort of problem. Let them be who they are. There is a great deal of pressure placed on parents to be constantly affirming and accepting. Is that what's at stake here? That parents are afraid to identify their own children as troubled? Could be. Is it this precarious balance of liberty and preemption? You don't like red flag laws because red flag laws allow somebody to say, I don't trust this person. We need to make sure they don't have any guns around them. And so then the government goes in and confiscates guns. Well, that's a violation of the Second Amendment, and anybody can make an accusation. That's why we don't like red flag laws. Okay. So we don't want the preemptive action, but would somebody have pulled a red flag on this shooter? And is it worth, is the liberty that some of us are subject to losing, given an accusation of somebody that you know, we've tripped a red flag in their mind, is the risk of losing our liberty worth not enacting laws that could have stopped this one potentially, and as a consequence, we have a dead substitute teacher and dead 15-year-old girl? And then you get into the, well, how many dead people do we need? How many dead students do we need before we're willing to enact these laws? And that isn't intellectually honest either. So that's why I'm saying I would heartily encourage you, I'd heartily encourage all of us to immediately tune out the voices. And I'm not in favor of censoring voices, but tune out voices that pretend that they know what's going on and they know how to stop all this. I mean, I can look and say, well, the problem is that too many young people are placing too little value on human life. I can echo Al Gore, who said those exact words at the memorial address for the slain at Columbine. Too many young people are placing too little value on human life. I agree. And why are they? I mean, we teach them every day that life has no meaning, life has no purpose, life is just a cosmic accident, and that when we die, we're just going to become compost on a grave. I mean, we teach them and embed in their minds that they're just a fortunate roll of the galactic dice, the universal dice, that we just happen to arise from the primordial sludge, and that's what we're going to go back to, and that there's no heaven, and there's no hell, there's no eternal justice, there's no absolute morality that exists out there. We embed that in young people's hearts and minds, because if we did the opposite, well, we'd be violating separation of church and state. You can't push your religion off. Okay. So instead we push this religion off, which it is a religion, that says this is all there is and ever will be. So if you're upset, why stick around? And why not take a few of the annoying people out with you as you go? There's no ultimate justice. So yeah, I can make that argument, but is that what motivated this shooter? I don't know. I don't know what it is. And you don't know what it is either. None of us know what it is. We can speak to things and make suggestions and discuss things and try to arrive at a solution that limits this. But we are never going to stop the consequences of a sinful society. We'll never stop it. The only solution to it is to win as many people to the cause of Jesus as we possibly can. But we know that we won't do that to perfection, which means we will continue to suffer the consequences of a sin-stained world. Now, does that mean we just throw up our hands and say, well, there's nothing we can do? No, I don't think so. And I think the first place we start with all of this stuff is with the security at the school. And you say, okay, but we've talked about this. Yeah, they can sneak things in. You can have automatic door locks. You can do all of that. But if a kid's determined to take a gun to school, what are you going to do? Well, you could have metal detectors at every school. Sure. Peter, do you know how much money that's going to cost? Yeah, I do. What I'm saying is, I think that has to be the primary discussion that we have right now. If you want to actually stop school shootings, and I say this as a teacher at a school that doesn't have metal detectors, you can have as many resource officers as you want, but if you have kids walking in with backpacks and you got a nutty kid that wants to do it, that it does. The school resource officer can respond after the event has started. That isn't preempting. That isn't stopping anything. So if you're going to be proactive, look, I guess my question, I've written this before. It starts with school security. And if schools got serious about security, they could eliminate a very, 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 very significant portion of these types of events from taking place. If there were metal detectors at Abundant Life School, would the 15-year-old have been able to get it in the door? I don't think so. I don't think they would have tried if they would have had to have passed their bag through a metal detector. Now, would they have done something in the parking lot? Maybe. But they wouldn't have taken it into the school because they couldn't have gotten it in there. My question is, every time I go to the county courthouse, I've had to get out of jury duty a couple times because they always call me for jury duty when I'm going to be gone or I've got a speaking trip or something. So a couple times I've had to drag my sorry ruined up to the fourth floor of the circuit court. You know what I do every time I walk in? The moment I walk in the door, there are two police officers standing there. And there is a giant metal detector that I walk through. My bag has to be checked. They go through it. They look at it. I walk through. They use the scanner on me if anything beeps. Every time. And you know why? Because we care about our elected officials who are conducting government for us. We care about our kids too. Why not? Why should we not be doing the exact same thing? Every school. Every school. You say, well, that's impossible. Okay. If it's impossible, then it's impossible. But I think we spend a lot of money in schools as it is. And I think some of that money could be better spent. And I think it could be better spent on things like this. And if every school in the country had it, would it eliminate all school shootings? I don't know. But it would eliminate some. It would have eliminated this one. That's what I'm saying. Talk about things that would have stopped these events. And metal detectors would have stopped this event. She would have never gotten the gun in the school. That's where I think we need to be talking right now. Let's talk about the differences between courthouses and schoolhouses. Why are we not taking as much of a vested interest in the protection of kids at school as we do courthouses and the officials there? And by the way, I want those officials protected, but it's just as serious over here. Those are my thoughts. And again, I'm stressing to you, I don't have all the answers. I don't even know the full account of what went on here. But when we start talking about motives, the motives are going to be varied. They're going to be different. What drives a student, see if I can word this the way that I want to word this. What drives a young people to commit a crime like that is going to be a lot more complex and a lot more difficult for us to, number one, get to the bottom of, and number two, to treat and to stop. That's going to be a lot more difficult. We're going to spend years. In fact, I don't think we'll ever be able to pinpoint exactly what it is, because it's always different that drives a young person to do something like that. So instead of spending our time trying to do that, let's talk about how we can prevent them from being successful in doing that. And that's where I would start. That's where I think we ought to focus. Now, I know there's not as much money in that for the politicians who want to grandstand and want to get the support of the NRA, and the NRA wants to drag out money. And then on the other side, the Sandy Hook Promise or whatever it is, and the mom's group that's out there that I can't even think of. Shannon Watts, I think, was her name or something like that. Mom's Demand, I think, was the name of the group. I understand they're going to go out and they're going to fundraise. Both sides are going to do that. And whatever, that's the political culture that we're in. But I'm more interested in how do I protect my kids at school and your kids at school. And to me, that's the conversation that always gets overlooked. You let me know your thoughts. Peter@peterheck.com. That's Peter@peterheck.com. That's not a very Christmassy message, is it? Not a very Christmassy message at all, but I think it's an important one. And God rest these two victims, and may he provide rest and comfort to the families. Just a horrific thing. And again, just like Sandy Hook, like right around Christmas time too. Not that it would ever be an easy time, but it seems particularly poignant and difficult at this time of year. So be in prayer for those people. I'm serious. I'm not just saying, yeah, thoughts and prayers. Truly be in prayer for those families. And if these two individuals love Jesus the way they say they did, then they are healed, they are healthy, they are whole, and wouldn't want to be here. And that is a bit of solace. But man, for the families that are left behind, answers and absolution that will never come. Did I just quote Titanic? I think I just quoted Titanic. I didn't mean to. That just rolled off. But I think that's what that old lady says at the end, that the victims of Titanic were looking for an absolution that would never come. Oh my goodness. Well, that's it. My credibility shot. That means this heck fire is over, and you got to ruminate on that for 2 weeks. I'll think about it for 2 weeks, and I'll come back and try to redeem myself in the new year. Have a great one. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And those of you who are paid subscribers, I'll see you real soon for After Hours. The Heckfire only burns because of loyal friends and supporters of this ministry. All of these are people and groups that I know personally and trust implicitly. I can't say enough good things about my friend Jonathan at Hartman Family Farms, about my bank, First Farmers Bank and Trust, my lawn care team at True Land Equipment, my insurance company at Norris Insurance, the place where I buy and lease all of my vehicles, McGonigal GM Buick. And Main Attraction Hair, nobody else touches this head. Stevens Machine, my mechanic at Terrell's Auto Service, my longtime realtor, the Wyman Group. And certainly so much can be said for those fighting for family values in the public square, like the Indiana Family Institute and Indiana Right to Life. Please support them all and thank them.